right, ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the 38th episode of Strength Academy Podcast. We're moving right along. This is Mundo, and once again, I'm joined by Grayson.
How's it going, everybody?
So, Grayson and I were just having a little
meltdown
aside from okay, so we got the registration for AO2 closed on the 27th of June, and they've already posted a preliminary schedule. And based on the preliminary schedule and the amount of lifters that we have, we're already stressing out a little bit. And so what I did is I was looking at our lifters' entry totals and then the totals by breakdown by the number of lifters in each session. So basically I was able to kind of like forecast where our lifters are going to end up and what session they'll end up. It's not completely accurate because I know people have final verification of entries before like everything's set in stone. So that won't happen until probably like a week before the meet. But as of right now, the way things are looking, do you want to kind of like go over what it's going to look like, Grayson?
Yeah, so it looks like we're going to have 6 lifters on Friday, starting in the morning with Colby and Angelica, followed by Mundo and Isaac in the afternoon, and Riley and Robin in the evening. Unfortunately for us, we're going to have to be a divided effort for that one because they're going at the same time.
Right,
the 73 both and 55A sessions.
Yeah, both A sessions.
So that's our Friday. On Saturday, we have another overlap between Joe and Liz going on in the morning, followed by Amanda and Michaela consecutively, followed by Gary and myself, who will be competing at the same time, and Tyler ending the day out immediately following that session.
Yeah.
So from 8 in the morning till 8 at night, basically, will be the
Saturday.
Be the whole Saturday.
That'll be my Saturday, yeah.
Yep, there goes Saturday. and then Sunday, we've got our cluster of 102-kilo men. Mike kicking things off in the morning. Alan and Chris to follow. And then our women's team closing out the day with Dee, Fran, and Allie, and Desa and Consuelo lifting in the 87 and the plus 87 yeah, categories.
All at the same time in the afternoon.
All 5.
Well, and the thing, and the reason that happened is because the way that it's set up right now is there is no B sessions for the 87 A's or the plus 87s.
Yep.
So, like, it's all one session. And
so it should be pretty easy to pace.
Yeah. Well, I mean, because we have people that are kind of like spread out throughout those sessions, but it's not usual to have like 15 lifters in a session, and that's how many there's probably going to be like in those 87. The 87 plus is probably going to be smaller, but the 87 A session is like 15 lifters.
Yeah, it seems like 15, and unless they get a lot more last minute $375 signups.
Yeah.
I think that's probably going to stay put. So we'll keep checking the schedule and getting our lifters, if you're listening, this is really for you, getting you guys squared away and planned out, because we're going to be so occupied that you got to know where to weigh in. And
yeah,
we'll be going down Thursday and encouraging everyone to go do the same things we do at every meet. Check where the weigh-ins are. Make sure that you check your weight on the official scale. Get an idea of the layout. It's in our backyard, but I don't spend a lot of time at the convention center. So
yeah, I rarely go downtown because number one, I hate it, and number two, because like I just don't really have that many things going on down there that I'm interested in doing, other than eating, which there's a few cool restaurants down there. Hopefully, so if you're visiting Albuquerque for AO2, and you're listening to this, There is a lot of good places, or are a lot of good places to eat. And there's, you know, some stuff to do around that hotel area. Like I said, I don't go down there personally, but I'm also like 37, so I don't really have a whole lot of interest in the club scene or anything that goes on down there.
But there's plenty of bars and restaurants within walking distance. Our downtown has kind of gone through a bit of a revival over the last 5 years.
Yeah.
I kind of enjoy checking things out in Albuquerque. If you guys are coming down and just need a scoop on where to go, feel free to reach out to us and send us an email, and we'll make sure to let you guys know where we like to hang out, what we like to do. I think it's going to be, if you're coming out, just be prepared for hydration being a pretty key point.
Yeah.
It's going to be pretty hot here.
It's already 90. I just checked the weather like 5 minutes ago, and it's 96 degrees outside right now. So
we'll be in the hundreds by July. Yeah,
we'll definitely
and then
be in
if
the
you're coming from sea level and humidity, just be prepared to drink extra water because the air is so dry that it's gonna be a bit of an adjustment.
Oh yeah, and it's also 5,000 feet above sea level. So welcome to altitude sickness. If you haven't been here before and you haven't trained at a high altitude, just may have some factors on your performance. Just letting you know ahead of time.
Yeah, I mean, factor that into your timing for attempts.
I'm gonna be burning people's clocks. Imagine that. It's like somebody from sea level that's just like trying to catch their breath, and you're like, "Oh, I'm gonna burn that clock."
Yeah. So luckily, we've got a bit of a home field advantage this go around. It looks like we're gonna be pretty busy. Yeah, really looking forward to it though. Everybody's training's looking really good. We're hoping to get a couple more people qualified for the American Open finals, and it's all starting to come together. It's really exciting. Yeah, and then, you know, always looking forward, you know, we were kind of talking this week about playing with some different programming strategies, first for a couple people and ourselves to kind of see how it looks, and then kind of building from there. But I think one of the main ideas that we're going to be playing with is using less rigid percentages. So playing around a little bit more with using percentage ranges rather than set percentages. And I feel like this is probably got some pros and cons to it. So on the pro side of using, like, say you're going to be doing six doubles in the snatch and you're, you know, doing block snatches that day. Rather than saying week one, 70%, week two, 75%, week three, heavy double,
right,
or something along those lines. Using kind of a guideline of saying between 70 and 80%, as long as the form is good, try to do a little bit more weight. And I think that the benefit of that is that you're going to be, hopefully we'll be able to be working at the highest point of our threshold for quality that day.
Yeah.
One of the downsides of this is I think that it's got to be an in-person endeavor, you know?
Oh, yeah, yeah. I know we've had, like, some kind of interested in having remote athletes. Some people have kind of reached out to us, but, like, with this kind of program, it really requires an in-presence, like, approach and to be able to tailor it a little better and also to be able to make adjustments in mid-course if necessary. And so what I like about this idea that we're kind of playing with as far as like the direction of how we want the programs to be set up, I like the percentage range because it gives you the opportunity to push a little more if you feel good that day or to hit maybe lighter weights if things aren't clicking as well. So like there's that kind of, I think that's the positive aspect of it. That's the upside is that like if you feel like pushing, you can. And so, like, for me, I like the idea of go as heavy as you can as long as your technique doesn't break down. And so having a range where if things are feeling good and technique is on point that day, pushing the numbers a little bit, I think that approach is good for a lot of people to be able to, like, make some strides in their technique and lift heavier weights. Or if they're feeling beat up, backing off. I mean, there'll be a deload within that schedule, but I think that having that range just kind of gives them more opportunities to hit weights in a broader scale as opposed to like, oh, I have to hit 75% today, and if I don't make it, I'm a terrible lifter, I'm a horrible person, like type thing.
Yeah, it can take a little bit of pressure off, you know, doing more of a weights by feel approach, but it does require that, you know, if you're doing it by yourself, that you have a better, like, you have a good understanding of what's actually going on.
Right.
Because I know for a long time in my lifting, I couldn't really feel the difference between something good and something bad. So if I had just gone with how it felt, I tended to continue to make mistakes.
Good and bad as far as technique?
As far as technique goes. Okay. Where, you know, I couldn't really tell what locked in back position in the squat felt like. So if I wasn't, you know, intentionally limiting myself to weights that I knew it was going well with, the difference between feeling good isn't always an accurate representation of doing good.
Right. Yeah, I got you.
So I think that if you're doing it by yourself, you've got to be pretty in tune with your technique, and you've got to kind of have your like kinesthetic awareness down of what correct feels like, and if you're you know, moving slower than you should, or you know, making some sort of mistake, you got to be able to catch that sort of thing.
Yeah.
And not push through something just because you want to hit a number. So it takes a little bit of that, you know, self-discipline to say, I wanted 80, but 75 was shaky, so I'm just going to do that a couple more times.
Yeah.
Despite what you may have wanted to do that day.
Yeah. And that's the, like, that's one of the other positives is, like, the ego lifting kind of gets tampered down with it. Because, like, then you don't have a specific, like, number that you have to hit, and you'll push through regardless. Or, like, oh, I'm going to try to beat this by, like, such and such percentage, or just round up to kilos, you know, whatever. So you can do that technically, but like, you don't get the people that are like, oh, my shoulder hurts, but like, I'm still going to try to make 90% because that's what's written down.
Yeah. And I think that pretty much any open-ended thing kind of falls into that category. And some people are just willing to be in a lot more pain than others, whether or not that's good in the long run.
Probably not.
I mean, well, it depends, you know? Like, some people, like, push through it and, you know, do amazing things for a while and...
For a while.
Yeah. It's not a longevity-minded focus. And that's the other kind
What's the downside, though, of, like, programming now in that aspect? Like, the ranges?
I think that the downside is you run the risk of things going right, but going so heavy so fast that you might hit a peak too early. So, like, if you are just kind of cooking for a couple weeks and you work up to 90% every time because it feels good and you're making good lifts,
right.
It might... selecting more specific numbers closer to a competition might be more important because, you know, if you're going all out with it and you're always working at the upper edge of that percentage range and you're still making it look good, if your recovery isn't on point, then you can probably burn yourself out.
Yeah.
Pushing a little too hard. So you've got to be kind of mindful, especially since the accessory exercises are kind of programmed in the same way. So whether you're doing snatch deadlifts or high pulls, you're trying to work as heavy as you can with good form. And if you're kind of able to maintain heavy weights, but your recovery isn't where it's supposed to be, then you're not going to be able to. You might bury yourself a little bit.
Oh, I see what you mean. Yeah. So right now we're like in competition prep. Right. And so we have this big meet that we're all gearing up for, and the entire team is kind of like headed in the direction of peaking for this meet. And everybody on the team, you know, that signed up is planning to compete in roughly 4 weeks.
About four weeks, in
about a month. And so the direction of the programming for the team is all headed toward peaking for this cycle. So what we're thinking about doing after this is, when you break down the mesocycles, the next big meet is probably going to be in October for us, which is the New Mexico State Championships.
Yes.
And so we're probably going to break things down into blocks to where it'll be more individualized starting off. And then as we get closer and closer to competition, it'll be more like this prep period again. Because like for the AO2 and for any national level meet, the way that things end up being is that there's a lot of waiting because you're grouped together by total. So you end up spending a lot of time waiting for your next lift because people have a similar total and they're taking similar number of lifts. So we kind of program things as waves to kind of like simulate competition. But the further away you get from competition, the more individualized things get. You want to start breaking down small parts of technique, working on different areas of the pulls, working on position and timing and things for different people. So like, I think the range approach where we're adjusting things for people, some people can go heavier a little bit earlier in the cycle, and some people might have to have a little more tempered approach with that range, maybe in the bottom end of the range, and then start building toward the middle of it as things progress on. But like, I want to see things in the higher end range as we get closer to competition, because you're going to be lifting maximal weights, and you're going to be closer to lifting those highest percentages at your peak, because that's when we've tried to build, you know, this whole thing toward, is you getting bigger numbers at competitions.
Yeah, and that's I mean, it's essentially it all comes down to, you know, the basic principle of, you know, periodization, where the further out from the important meet you're trying to build the qualities, so that's strength and explosiveness, and then refining the technical movements, and then the closer you get to competition you're trying to transfer those increases in strength and technique, and you're trying to transfer and apply those to the competition lifts. So, you know, periodization is going to stay roughly the same. It's just going to be the ranges will change mesocycle by mesocycle versus being fixed percentages changing every week.
Okay. So,
and then taking, you know, a little bit more of a weights by feel approach as far as squatting and pulling, because I mean, I'm sure that a lot of you guys who have been in gyms and followed programs with people, that for somebody, three sets of three snatch pulls at 105% might be really, really difficult, or might be nothing at all and just kind of a walk in the park.
Yeah.
And so by open-ending that, you know, oh, we're going to do snatch pulls, and you're going to go as heavy as it's still a snatch pull.
Right.
Will allow people to really be working at the correct threshold for them. So it's going to be kind of an interesting experiment in learning how to... I think the important thing will be teaching people how to auto-regulate a little bit, and I think it's going to take being a little bit in tune with, I feel like I could probably do that, but if I do 10 more kilos on the squat today, am I going to clean and jerk well tomorrow?
Yeah.
And kind of looking at it as kind of a big picture.
Yeah. And it kind of like when people take a look at their programming for the week, and I know you like to do programming based like on a week. I know you have a direction that the programming is headed in a general sense. So you have the gestalt of it, and then you're breaking it down week by week, but lifters should also be looking at their programming for the week and saying, oh, I shouldn't be doing crazy stuff in the middle of the week because I have this towards the end of it and stuff like that. So I know that it's partly their responsibility to not go like ham in the middle of the week either and try to like max out something when they know that they're doing heavy singles in that same exercise a couple days later,
you know,
in that fifth session. So so as far as like programming, like how did you learn to program? Like what kind of steps did you have that got you to the point to where you started to develop your own way of programming? I know it's not set in stone yet, and both of us are still trying to figure out different methods to implement, and we're always taking into account new information and maybe adopting ideas out of that as well. But like, where did you kind of start off as far as like programming goes?
So initially when I started programming, it was just kind of writing some extra workouts for myself, where I was going to the gym kind of during an open gym, and I had a training partner, and we'd go in and we'd kind of pick programs online and then follow along with them, and eventually kind of started saying, okay, well, we'll combine elements of this Texas Method template with this gymnastics training thing. And it was initially just reading a lot of different programs was really helpful, and just kind of seeing the different ways that people do it and start looking for patterns. When I started coaching CrossFit, I had to do an additional coaches education thing to work at the gym I was at, so you had to get a level one, but then you had to also go through their separate course.
Sure.
And that included a lot of programming stuff. I think one of the first books that I read was Practical Programming by Ripto and Kilgore, which kind of outlined... it's sort of based around, like, optimizing the novice effect. So a beginner will be stronger every workout, an intermediate will be stronger every week, an advanced lifter might be stronger every 1 or 2 months. So how quickly you escalate things needs to change based on how close someone is to their genetic potential.
Sure.
And I think so a lot of the ideas that are kind of outlined in Practical Programming and to some extent Starting Strength, as far as like basic progression for taking a beginner from the bar to a 300-pound squat, is really good content, because we do a similar thing for our beginner program. So we basically we front squat, we back squat, and we do a unilateral leg exercise in the middle of the week. Mm-hmm. We start at a weight that looks really good and manageable, and then I make them go up 3 kilos a week as long as they can sustain that
right.
progression. And then while doing that baseline strength increase, we're increasing snatch and clean deadlifts along the same route and doing technical exercises for the snatch and the clean and jerk. And that's kind of the first kind of programming style. I would, you know, write up little workouts for my friends to do. If they were, you know, in college and needed some help, I, you know, put something together for that.
Right.
And then a lot of it, reading the programming sections in Greg Everett's Olympic lifting textbook, basically.
Right. Yeah, textbook.
Bob Takano's book, Practical Programming, A Winning Coach's Guide, is an excellent source. Who's another good resource? The Scientific Principles of Strength Training video series that Juggernaut's put out is really good. And then a little bit of just kind of in college. So it's all kind of been pieced together. And the main thing is, you know, following... A lot of it has to do with just kind of logic being applied. So if you're looking at a program that you're writing... If you're, you know, just starting out and helping people or writing your own workouts, you don't want to like haphazardly pick exercises. So you want to make sure that in every, if I look at a week of programming and say, why are you doing snatch balances on Wednesday? You should have an answer other than it just seemed like a day to do snatch balances.
Right.
Like you should have a purpose for everything that you're doing, and there should be a direction that you're trying to head. I think those were kind of a lot of my early programming influences, though, and it was just running a lot of programs and trying to see what the pattern was,
yeah,
and seeing what tended to work and what didn't.
I think that like it's real close to a science experiment where you're giving an individual things to do and then see what the adaptation is or a lack of adaptation is. So if the individual thrives on the program, then you try to continue doing those things, and the things that cause the individual to, you know, have a setback, like whether that's they're not recovering well or, you know, their technique suffers or something's you know, coming apart, then you kind of exclude those or diminish those. So it's really just like this trial and error thing where some things work and you keep those things, and some things don't work, and you try to either change them or adapt them in a different way or apply them in a different way. So, like, it's a real interesting concept, because it's basically like a, it really is just like a science experiment. Every cycle's.
Yeah, so you're just manipulating variables. Those variables are things like volume of exercise, intensity, both top end intensity and average intensity. So, you know, if you're going to heavy singles once a week, but you're doing light stuff the rest of the week, then your average intensity isn't that high, as opposed to if you're staying above 85% every day.
Yeah.
And just kind of tweaking things little by little. A lot of times with people, I'll, if there was the general idea that worked pretty well, but there's something else that seemed like it didn't really work, a lot of times you don't want to change too many variables if you're writing programs for people all at once.
Right.
Because then you don't really have a good measure of whether or not it was, which variable it was that you changed had an effect.
Yeah.
And
kind of like an elimination diet a little bit.
Yeah, yeah. So you don't want to, you know, reintroduce everything all at once, because then you don't know if it was, you know, pasta or cheese that upset you.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah.
But I think, yeah, if you're looking at programming, you know, take into account, try to listen to everybody. And it's hard to do, but the biggest thing and the biggest pitfall I think people fall into is getting really set and locked into one particular way of doing things. Because now that, you know, I've been doing this a while and I've seen so many people respond so differently to, you know, some people will burn out real fast if you're pushing heavy triples, but some people thrive on it.
Yeah.
And figuring out what kind of athlete you're working with and, you know, keeping, you know, mental notes or physical notes, however, you know, your thought process is to programming.
Yeah.
A lot of times for me, I have, you know, the prior week written down. I have, you know, the little mental notes I've taken during the week. And then, but for me, the process of writing a program is a lot of, before I sit down and type it, I've pretty much thought it out all the way through.
Yeah.
And then, you know, I do the majority of the reorganization and like thinking about things before I actually sit down and write it down. And I think that some people need to sketch it out on paper. I know for a long time it really helped me to write by hand.
Mm-hmm.
It just kind of like, and then you kind of like draw arrows to, you know, move things around and reorganize.
Sure.
But yeah, I think always take in new information, and if it conflicts with something else that you've been thinking about, you need to, you know, kind of use those kind of rational, logical thought processes of, okay, well, what could the possible reason for these two sources disagreeing with each other?
Yeah.
Like, is the dip and drive of the jerk on your heel or in your midfoot? And you have to kind of think, well, okay, well, what is the vast majority of people saying? What does it actually look like when I watch videos of things described two different ways? And a lot of times, I think that there's more overlap than is let on. I think that, you know, especially with, you know, where the balance is, like whether midfoot means slightly towards the ball of your foot or slightly towards your heel.
Yeah.
I think it tends to be a lot more similar than the language used lets on. You know, it tends to be pretty consistent.
Yeah. Well, the thing is like everybody describes things in different ways, and then if you translate movements from other languages, they're described in different ways. So like in Russian, like you could have this whole paragraph to describe one exercise.
Yeah.
Like in English, so it's kind of like if you look at these exercises, they're still completed in the same way. They're just described in, you know, large variants. So it's just like one of the things that I always have a hard time describing to people is like not a sots press, because a sots press is done from the front in a clean grip with in the squat, but behind the neck. So we call it a press and snatch, or a press and squat snatch, or like a strict press and squat snatch. I mean, you could call it a bunch of different things, but it's essentially the same exercise.
Yeah.
So like we're always trying to figure out how to make our vernacular consistent in our vocabulary when we're programming for athletes, you know, at least have it somewhat consistent so that I'm not getting the same question over and over from everybody.
Yeah, it's important to at least try to use the same language with people. And that's going to vary drastically just based on what gym you're at.
Yeah.
And who you're working with has read, and whether they're, you know, going off of the things Greg Everett calls the exercises, or things Ursula calls the exercises. If you listen to their podcast, there's a lot of clarifying what they mean when they say certain things.
Yeah.
And I think that's...
Well, that's kind of problematic, too, because, like, you have to always clarify everything, and it's, like, this continual process of, like, oh, well, you know, this is what I'm trying to describe to you as the athlete, what I want you to accomplish in this exercise, or this is what I want the emphasis to be on, and if it's not all the same, like, or they've been listening to somebody else, like, well, you know, I'm trying to describe it to you this way, and you're getting conflicting sources of information, but really it's the same exercise. So I'm not telling you anything different, just telling you something that is described differently.
Yeah, and I think that on one hand it can be a little confusing and get a little frustrating trying to dial in language about, you know, well, what does this word mean in this context?
Yeah.
And I think that that's kind of at the root of a lot of times that people have misunderstandings, even just in your day-to-day life.
Oh, yeah, that's true.
That, you know, maybe somebody, you know, takes that word to mean something else, and, you know, in the context that you're using it, or, you know, it's like when we discussed the absurd, whether it's like, is it absurd with a lowercase a or a capital A, and then, you know, like, these are kind of the things that, you know, spill out into all kinds of areas that make it really hard to get your thoughts in order and make sure that you're not talking past each other when you're having a conversation.
Like in the debates for the Democrats.
Oh, God, that was just...
yeah. I didn't watch any of them because, like, I'm just not interested in people screaming over each other.
There was a lot of that.
I saw some of the highlights and I was just like,
Yeah, politics as spectator sport is going to be good for the next couple of years.
Yeah.
Well,
speaking of, like, things that you want to... that we were thinking about, and I think... that kind of covers, like, a little bit of the weightlifting stuff that we wanted to talk about. We've been just thinking about programming and our different approaches to it this week, and that kind of, like, wraps up what our thoughts were as far as, like, the direction that we want to, like, take into account when we're
running new experiments.
Yeah, we're basically running new experiments is what we're going to be doing. So, and we're looking forward to that. I'm looking forward to it because Grayson and I generally experiment on ourselves with our programming first. And then we'll just adopt it out to the rest of the team and to individuals as well. So I think it's going to be fun. I'm looking forward to this next block of training after this competition already.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to it. Going to move up from 89 to 96 after this one. So yeah, and I'm tons of volume and get a lot of food in.
Yes.
Try to move up a weight category.
And I might move up to 81 from 73, just for a little bit at least.
It'll be fun, man. Yeah. Bulking up is half... I don't know. It's the fun part.
Yeah. Somebody called me small the other day, and I didn't appreciate it. So I guess it's time to go up to another weight class.
But yeah, so one of the kind of, you know, applicable to weightlifting, but really applicable to everything else that I've been thinking about a lot this week is the idea of eternal recurrence. So saying that if you... you woke up one day and you were told, all right, everything that you do in this life will be infinitely repeated over and over again. How would that change the way that you're doing things? And so every hardship you've ever been through and every decision you've made and every joy you've experienced will be repeated infinitely in the exact same way without changing. So every decision you make is an eternal decision. And how that kind of plays into how you're thinking about the decisions that you make in your life. Because when you frame it as any choice that you make, any time that you're in now, is going to repeat itself, and every decision you make makes that decision permanent and repeated, it can kind of take you to a different place as far as thinking about, say you're in a job that you don't like, and you're saying, well, I just need to put in 10 more years, and then I can retire from this.
Right.
But that decision to kind of not enjoy those 10 years is going to be an eternal one. So using the idea that, you know, you're that essentially operating under the assumption that time is a circle, and every single thing that you choose to do and every decision you make in your life will be repeated infinitely, I find is a really valuable way to think to prevent yourself from wasting time on things that don't matter to you.
Okay.
So if you're going down that road, the other essential thing to operating on the assumption of eternal recurrence is not just saying that it will happen again, but embracing it to the point that you want it to happen again. So saying that as things are is as I willed them to be.
Okay.
And I wouldn't change anything, even the bad things. Every terrible thing that's happened to you, truly embracing that being a part of who you are, and not wanting to change the past, but willing a recurrence of it. Does that make sense?
It makes some sense. Yeah. So the idea of eternal recurrence.
Yeah.
Is that things happened, are happening, and will happen the same way as you decide them to be.
Yes.
In a way. So it's kind of like a play on accepting reality as it is, and then choosing to embrace reality as it is.
Yeah, so it's subtly... So the Stoics also kind of used this idea of eternal recurrence, but it's taking it one step beyond their point, which was accept the world as it is versus willing the world to be as it is. So it's your volition. So it's taking more control of it.
Right.
So
it's like amor fati, so like a love of fate. Like, this is my fate and I'm going to accept it and I'm going to love it and embrace it because this is what makes me who I am and who I choose to be.
Exactly.
But if you're proactive in choosing who you want to be, you can get to a better place.
Yeah, so it's not
Cyclical, though, right? It can be cyclical, but it's not... What's another way to say it? It's like it's not an unbreakable cycle. You can choose to move in a different direction because your choices determine like what and who you are in life, right?
Well, and that's where it gets weird. So if it is that circle,
right?
You don't know if you're on the first run or the 10,000th run. So you have to operate as if you're on the first run, but you don't know if you've already made those choices before.
Okay. Okay, yeah.
So if time is a circle, you don't know if this is your first go around or your 1,000th go around. So you kind of have to operate as if those choices matter.
Right.
And that you're going to be, you know, repeating those from this point. But you don't really know if you're on the first run. And where that kind of, I think, is an interesting distinction from, you know, the love of fate in Stoicism,
right,
is that, you know, acceptance of the world, this kind of pushes to, rather than accepting that the majority of the things in your life that happen to you are outside of your control, rather than accepting that, this is kind of trying to rebel against that and harness as much control over your own life as you can, accepting that you're not always going to control everything, but striving towards having as much autonomy and control over yourself as possible within your lifespan, because that's where, you know, you kind of flourish. So if you're always making your choices based around something that we talk about a lot, which is fill your time with only the things that you want to actually be doing. And so rather than accepting that I need to work this job to make ends meet and I don't really want to do that, saying, you know, rather than accepting that as kind of the fate that you're in, trying as hard as you can to take control over as much of your life as you possibly can, so that when you have to do this again, you end up with more autonomy.
Okay. So it's almost like a parallel timeline then, or a parallel universe.
Yeah, in a way. Or you know, if you think about it as, you know, the universe expanding, then contracting, then regoing again, right. You know, it's kind of that you're going to do the same thing that would you do anything different today if you had to relive that day over and over and over again?
It's like Groundhog's Day.
It's like Groundhog Day, but your whole life.
But your whole life is like Groundhog's Day.
Yeah.
Except you don't know which run you're on.
Yes.
Okay. Oh, which makes it real weird. That makes it real strange. Because if you were living an existence where like it plays out a specific way every time, right? And you can change some things, but it always ends up in the same place. Like, what really do you have that much control over then?
Yeah, so it's kind of a rebuke against, you know, the idea that you might not have the free will to do whatever it is that you want. You might have already made that decision.
Right.
And you're just on the same path again, thinking that you're making new decisions. But of course it would feel like that, because you don't remember the first time you did it, or the 20th time you did it.
Right.
So I think that, for me, it's really helpful in... if we try to tie it in to weightlifting, right? If you have every decision you make with your training is repeated over and over again. So every time you slack on your nutrition or don't get enough sleep, you're condemning yourself to do that over and over and over again.
Right.
So you need to be making those decisions about your lifting as if that was going to be fated to happen over and over again.
Yeah.
So if you're lift every training session as hard as you can and do everything as perfectly as you can, because if you don't, you've doomed yourself to having a crappy training session over and over again.
Okay. So there is a way like kind of out of it though. So like if you're just trying to get better, right? And none of us is perfect, and I don't think that there isn't a person on the planet that can say that there isn't room for improvement in their life or in their who they are. The first step takes a monumental amount of effort in both will and energy, right? It's just like learning a new skill. Like when you first show up to the gym, it's going to take a lot of mental energy and a lot of physical energy to learn how to lift. But over time, these things become automatic because you've done them over and over and over again. So the path to winning is going to take some effort and energy at the beginning to change this cyclical nature of what life could potentially be and to get out of it.
To make it
the best cycle possible. So like if it was like an improving version, like every version was run and you're just trying to make improvements, like bug fixes, when you get updates on your phone, like they're trying to improve on the version that's currently in existence. So if the version of your life isn't what you want it to be, then those small changes that take monumental effort will eventually lead to habitual success and winning and things like that. So, but it's part of like accountability and taking responsibility for yourself. So like what you're saying is this eternal recurrence is like the ultimate level of self like ownership, right?
Yep.
Because you're saying everything that happens is because I've decided and willed it so. So I'm loving it because I keep doing it, or I'm going to change it because I want it to be better.
And the hardest thing with eternal recurrence, and what I really like about it, is it's not just taking ownership of the things that you've done well, mm-hmm. but it's taking ownership of the things that you've messed up and the things that have been hurtful and the things that have gone poorly for you,
right.
and accepting them as a vital and integral piece of who you are now. So rather than looking back and saying, I wish things were right. different, you look back and say, I things to be exactly as they are now.
Well, yeah, that's
because
like, that's
you idea. Have to own your life. So if you're always looking backwards and wishing that things were different, rather than owning even your mistakes and even the things that you regret most, yeah. owning that you wouldn't do them any differently And if you can say that through the ups and downs of my life, I would have done nothing differently, then that's kind of that ultimate self-achievement of saying, I've lived a life that I'm comfortable recurring.
Yeah.
And if you're, you know, if, you know, you're struggling through your teen years, or you had some upset in your 20s and you're, you know, lost your way for a while and came back and then made these things and built your life the way that you want it to be,
right,
you can't say that you want things to go back and change, because then you wouldn't be who you are. So not just embracing a recurrence of the good and the joyful, but embracing a recurrence of even those things that have brought you pain as an integral part of building that life that you have as much control over as is possible as a human.
Well, I think like adversity and hard times also develop people. It develops their character in different ways, and everybody responds to adversity differently. But I think that to have a lack of adversity in your life means that you've been untested and you haven't had to prove yourself in any way. And that's just as bad as, you know, making a terrible decision. So like, some, I don't
you
know.
You need to look for those tests. Well,
yeah. So like, if something's not challenging you to try to show you what you're made of, or challenging you to become a better version of yourself, then, you know, you're kind of just like out there existing, right? There's nothing to measure yourself against.
Yeah. You need the challenge to have a drive, and you need a drive to not, you know, I think that one of the main kind of underpinnings of the idea is like a hatred of stagnation.
Right.
So like the idea that if you just live the same day 5,000 times in a row, you didn't really take advantage of what you have. Because, you know, if the idea is that there is no life besides this life.
Right.
And not only is there nothing other than it, you have to do it again. So would you really work that job you hate for 40 years just to have a bigger TV if you knew that that was all you were ever going to do?
Yeah.
So using that as kind of a motivator to give your all at your training sessions, or make that scary, risky change in your profession, or take those chances, because if you don't, you'll never get the opportunity to do differently.
And so, okay, so there was a man, his name is Boyd Vardy, and he had a quote, and I'll read it to you right now, but it's really relevant to this. And he said, "I would love my older self to not be in the story of how it should have been, but to live in deep acceptance with how it is. I think the only time we can really be unhappy is when the way we think it should be and the way it is are different." So, in a way, like, the idea of eternal recurrence is that you look back on your life and you wish things were different, and wishing doesn't accomplish anything. It doesn't change anything. So you either have to accept things for how they are and then make a new decision to move them in a new direction, or, you know, embrace the fact that, hey, that hard time made you better. It challenged you to become who you are, and it's part of your story, and just to accept it. And it may not be the best part of your story, but it's not the whole part of your story.
Yeah, and it's, you know, accepting, and not just accepting, but saying that even though it was a mistake, you do it again to be who you are today.
Yeah. Yeah, that's...
So that's been rattling around in my head all week. Rattling around
in your brain all week. Yeah, just the cyclical nature. Well, the thing is, like, when life speeds up and slows down according to what's occurring in our different, you know, stages of life. So, like, when life moves fast, that means a lot of things are changing. And when it's slow is when it's routine. You're doing the same thing every day. Every day is the same. You show up, you go home, you eat, you go to sleep. Like, that's all routine. But the changes when things, like, are vastly different is when time speeds up, because things are different and you're not adapted to it. So I think this idea of eternal recurrence and just having a like a, the cyclical nature of time, if time is just like a circle and you're just reliving it all the time, but you can make minor changes to change it, move it in a new direction. That's a large thing to wrap your mind around.
Yeah, it's a fun idea, and there's a lot of different takes on it. But you know, the idea that time is a circle it shows up in multiple cultures across the planet, and it's one of those things that I think is intuitive if you don't have any other existing schema to view things from.
Yeah.
So the fact that we kind of live in a time now where, there's the beginning and the end, and time is looked at as a line,
right,
is very much a function of the culture that we come from.
Right.
Because, prior to, Christianity spread across, Europe and the rest of the world, a lot of those cultures believed in kind of a cyclical nature to creation and destruction. Right. So it wasn't just that the earth is created and then destroyed and then there's this next thing after.
Right.
It's a creation destruction cycle.
Okay.
And I think that, the only reason that doesn't feel like an intuitive thing to us is that, we kind of exist in a schema that's built upon, even our science is laid upon a foundation of this was the start. And then we're not at the end yet,
right?
But there's going to be one. And we kind of think of things as being on this straight line. But, if we take ourselves out of the cultural circumstances that we're in and we're born into an Iron Age village in Norway, there's no saying that things being a straight line would be an intuitive thing.
Right.
Because seasons are cyclical. These sort of things, birth and death and birth and death, and there's kind of these, waves that you see.
Right.
So there's no reason to think that outside of, the framework that we're viewing the world, that time being a circle wouldn't be kind of an intuitive thing to you if you were brought up without any context.
Yeah.
So I think that, whether or not it is, it can be valuable to think of it as such as far as your decision making goes.
Yeah, and I could see how that, you could even apply that to weightlifting, where it's just like let's say you were repeating a program, or even you're starting a new program. How you look at it and how you approach completing that training has the outcome, tied to it.
So yeah, it has a lasting effect.
Yeah, it has a lasting effect. So, if you show up and you do your, your training for the day and you're half-assing things, it's like you just half-assed a bunch of your workouts, but, what if you just did them better and started doing them better? Like, how much more progress you'd make and how much more you'd get out of it? So, instead of just approaching it as, I just have another day of snatches and clean and jerks and squats, but actually working on doing them to the best of your ability in every training session, how much more progress and improvement you'd encounter. And if you took that into the rest of your day, how much less crap you spent time and energy on, and how much more things that you could focus on that matter to you, what kind of outcome would that have on your life?
Yeah, and I think striving towards that, doing whatever it is that you want to be doing the majority of the time.
Yeah.
And if that's kind of the end goal, you've got to make those decisions and you've got to take those risks, because otherwise you'll just stagnate and kind of end up being full of regret rather than embracing even the worst things that have happened to you.
Yeah. All right.
Something to think about, guys.
That took a real weird turn, I know, but Grayson and I aren't perfect people, and these are things that we think about, and something that he's thought about and he's brought to my attention, and I'm just kind of learning about what he was thinking about this week, and now I'm starting to think about it. So how can I improve? So it's not just we've arrived and we're telling you about this process. Like, these are things that we think about and maybe it'll help you. And maybe it's just something that you can just kind of mull around throughout the week. And
yeah, when you're filing paperwork and you're lost in thought, you can kind of explore some of that territory.
Yeah, and the shower thoughts, you start to, you know, bubble up and you just think about like, oh, maybe I can make, you know, a change today if you really apply yourself and, you know.
And own your mistakes.
Yeah, and own your mistakes too. And then we all make them. I know that I'm not done making mistakes. I'm sure there's still plenty in the future that I'm going to encounter. But I guess how we accept them and embrace them and make them a learning experience changes who we are and makes us hopefully get better off in the end.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, guys, have a great week of training. AO2, keep your eyes peeled. You can watch a bunch of our lifters. And we'll be extra tired that week.
Yeah, for sure. Follow us on Instagram at AlbuquerqueStrengthAcademy.com. We're going to be posting more videos of our lifters as training starts heating up for competition. And then reach out to us, ASAweightlifting@gmail.com, if you have any questions. I don't think we're going to be taking on a whole bunch of more remote clients anymore.
We've got a few, couple in the pipeline. But we want to make sure that, you know, we're not sacrificing the quality of things that we can help people with. Right. But if you're interested, you know, still reach out. We'll talk about it and see if it'll be the right fit.
If you're a good fit.
Happy lifting, guys.
All right. Until next time, lift with no regrets, y'all.